Welcome to VR in Education.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of VR in Education, where we dive deep into virtual reality for teaching and learning. Today, we have the pleasure of talking to Horacio Torrendel. He's the visionary CEO and founder of TreeView VR AR. We are excited to have him today because we're going to explore the innovative world of Newton's Room, TreeView's latest mixed reality app designed to transform how we look at and learn physics. So this cutting-edge platform invites users to engage with immersive physics puzzles, and they're dynamically adapted to the room surroundings. So they're using Newton's laws of motion. It's interactive and very challenging. So welcome to the show, Horacio.
Thanks, Craig, for having me.
I always like to start with an origin story type question, and either personally or possibly related to your company, what got you started in VR or even AR, if you want?
Perfect. So my journey started with the DK1. I had the chance to try it out in university when I was kind of about halfway through university. I was studying software engineering. And at the time, I was kind of into the whole psychedelics, the Doors, you know, the 60s, 70s ideas, movements. So I was kind of into that mindset and engineering at the same time. And I really, when I tried out the DK1 for the first time, I kind of had like a spiritual moment of connecting these two ways of thinking or ideas around like what is reality and kind of like really expansion of, you know, the whole 60s hippie mindset around reality and kind of experiences and all of that with my interest in engineering. So when I put the DK1 on for the first time, I think it was like 2013, I had like this moment, this calling of fusing these two interests into what I thought was going to be the next chapter of computing and technology as a whole. So that was a very special moment. It's been almost 10 years since that moment. That's how I kind of got into the space. And then I did my thesis with the DK2 that I managed to get one to Uruguay, which we have the big challenge here in South America to getting access to hardware. I was lucky that a friend was traveling to the US. He brought one and we did our thesis with the DK2 that we kind of built a tool. It was more on the engineering side, connecting a PC with a Quest. The Oculus DK2 at that time. And it was about exposing to phobias and a few other like psychologic tools that we were kind of building at that time. And then with the DK2, I started to do freelance work online. And that started to grow one client next, and then we started to get bigger clients, started to work with large startups, and then we ended up working with enterprises and some of the largest companies in the world at the moment. So that's kind of been my journey in high-level summary.
And with working with startups, I'd imagine the majority of your work under the umbrella of TreeView has been mostly VR. Is that correct?
We were actually pretty early into mixed reality. We got the Microsoft HoloLens 1 when it came out in 2016. We were lucky to get access to one of those, and we actually started working on client work for the HoloLens 1. So I think that was really the first step into, because there was always the AR, mobile AR, which we did a lot of work, which I thought was very important for us in 2017, 2018, 2019. But we were really, really early into mixed reality. So we started working with HoloLens 1. We started working with Magic Leap 1 as well. So we did lots of work with that. And HoloLens 2, when it came out, we did a bunch of work, and we're still doing work on HoloLens 2 and with Magic Leap 2 as well. And now with the new generation of, you know, the Quest 3 and Apple Vision Pro. So we've always been very focused in mixed reality, which I think has been a big differentiator. We've done some projects with many projects in VR as well. So we've worked a lot in VR as well. But I think one thing that makes us a bit different than many people who have been in the space for a long time is that we've been in the mixed reality tech stack since the launch of the HoloLens 1 in 2016. So that was a yeah, we have several years of kind of like the initial starting of that, specific pillar of technology.
Are you worried? So, you know, one of the things about the new Quest 3, which is exciting, is its ability to see the room through mixed reality. However, you know, it's only, I think, a 5-megapixel camera, which makes us seeing that really, you know, nowhere near the resolution of the human eye. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that in regards to the ability to use it as a learning tool?
Yep. So I think there's trade-offs, because if you compare it to, like, I think the two types of implementations here is the companies that do pass-through the glass technology. So Magic Leap and HoloLens, where you're actually, the physical world, you're actually seeing it with your actual eyes and basically with, you know, they project 3D models and 3D content on top. So there's that. And the big trade-off is field of view. So you can really only be able to see something when it's in your center point of focus. So that's one option, which I think, you know, Magic Leap and HoloLens have been doing some great work there. And then the second option, which is Apple and Meta's approach, which is camera pass-through. And I think they both have their benefits. I am personally more towards the camera pass-through because it allows for a much more immersive experience. Although potentially the camera feed might be slightly less resolution, well, much less resolution than your actual eye, once you're actually in the moment, in the experience, that tends to just fade to the back, and you don't actually, that's not part of your conscious. You actually forget about that. So like once you pass the 30 seconds into the experience, you actually forget you're seeing a camera feed. So I think it's more of the perception than if you actually analyze that specific characteristic. So I'm much towards camera pass-through to be able to actually, and not only like many features in Newton's room, it's about not only projecting objects in your space, but actually being able to transform your space. So we actually have features that you actually go inside of water because we want to change the, we'll go into that in a bit more detail, but we're changing the ambient medium to be able to add more friction to objects. So all of that concepts would only be, we'll only be able to do that with camera pass-through.
Now, because you've already started unpacking Newton's room, which is the whole reason why I wanted to talk to you, let's focus in on that for a minute. You know, that as I said before, VR has obviously been a lot more popular just because of the tool has been there. You know, the Quest mm-hmm. 2, the Quest 1, standalone. Now that the Quest 3 is out, was that one of the drivers behind you guys deciding that it's time to build a more mixed reality experience called Newton's Room? Give me the motivation to build in a mixed reality type environment.
100%. So we think that Quest 3 is the first and only consumer mixed reality device on the market. And so we've been working with all of these other ones, including Apple Vision Pro, in enterprise. And our focus in TreeView has always been enterprise work. So we are we're a software development agency that focuses on XR for enterprise. That's kind of our main focus. And we've been working with all these other technologies, which are great, but many, you know, very few people can have access to. Everyone's talking about like the $3,500 price tag on the Apple Vision Pro, but that is the same price tag on HoloLens. It has been the same price tag on Magic Leap. So that was just, for us, the standard pricing on those headsets. So we thought that was normal. Just, it was like totally aligned with the other headsets. What Quest 3 really brought to the table was that same quality of experience, because I'm a super fan of the Quest 3, but targeted for consumers. So we thought there was a huge opportunity here of basically we've created mixed reality with the Quest 3 has really opened up a whole new category for consumer market, which is mixed reality consumer experiences. And we think that education is one of the highest impact use cases of this technology. And that's kind of why one of the main reasons we started working on Newton's Room.
And why did you decide to hang your hat on physics topics?
Yep. So going over kind of how we, the premise of the whole Newton's project was the following. We saw this opportunity with the Quest 3 and the consumer market of mixed reality and being an early adopter in that space. We wanted to create something that we had experience creating, which was education and training, that we've been doing this a lot for enterprise. So we have a lot of experience on the enterprise section. So we wanted to use all of that knowledge. We wanted to do a mixed reality, which we also have a lot of experience, and we wanted to do it in a topic of interest of our team. And we are mainly software engineers, so STEM is a natural topic of interest of ours. And we wanted to go to the fundamentals, which is really Newton's laws of physics. It's kind of the fundamentals of basically all of modern STEM. So that was kind of how we arrived at that Venn diagram of interests and ideas and thesis that kind of landed this concept.
So let's get into the weeds in regards to the app itself. You know, I could try, but I bet you're a lot better. Give us just a general overview of the experience for listeners who haven't tried it yet. And then we'll get into some more details about some of the different components and whatnot.
Perfect. Newsroom is a consumer mixed reality experience that provides education in Newton's laws of physics, which are the first law, second law, third law, inertia, acceleration, and action and reaction. And we've created and designed a core game mechanic around these concepts. So this core game mechanic, you have to propel a projectile to land inside of a destination, similar to curling in some ways, you know, the game on ice. And that was actually one of the ideas of, we got a few core mechanics from existing games, which curling was one, which the idea of having to project something. And what was interesting about curling is that the people on ice actually they regulate the drag force of the actual projectile. So that was a concept that we were very interested in. How can we actually modify that ball, that stone on curling is moving at the same trajectory. And the only thing that's slowing it down is the friction on the ice. And they can actually modify that friction on the ice by making it more smooth. So that was one of the ideas to land at destination. We also got a few ideas of pool, being able to project against different objects, action and reaction, at what angle you hit and what angle you come out, balls hitting together, and kind of all of the relationship between masses interacting with each other. So we got a bunch of those ideas and said, how can we reinvent this in this new medium that we can control everything in the environment? We can bring objects, we can interact with all of your physical space, we can interact with your table, with your walls. And our goal was really to maximize how mixed reality as a medium. Because many things that we see kind of on VR developers migrating into the space is that there's just pass-through is not enough to really justify a mixed reality. Like just being able to have an experience where instead of being in a virtual environment, you're in your space, it is cool, there is value, but it doesn't maximize that medium. So our exploration was, how can we really maximize how can we create an experience that it can only make sense in mixed reality, in your space, in your physical space, and not in VR? That was kind of the magic of around that idea. So we created this experience where you launch a projectile and you have to reach a destination. So it's just not in a linear. We put some checkpoints where you actually have to collect those checkpoints, which is kind of a pointing system. And the user has two main variables to interact with. They can control the mass of the object, and that controlling the mass of the object affects how that projectile interacts with different other masses in the environment. And we can we change the drag force. An object will always continue in its same trajectory unless there's an external force. And the external force that we're talking about is drag force. It's air slows down an object because of friction. Water does that much faster, and oil does that much faster. Helium does that less, and space does. There's no external drag force that stops an object. We're assuming no gravity in this experience. And that premise allows you to modify these two different variables, understand the relationship between them and the object, and you're actually doing a game mechanic. So you're solving a puzzle, you're solving a problem by using these two core inputs, which through this mechanic is how we are explaining the law of inertia, which an object always continues in a straight line or in a straight direction unless there's an external force, the law of acceleration, which explains the relationship between objects when they collide, and action and reaction, which is the explanation of the bounce effects that happen in the scene. So that's kind of the premise of Newton's room.
I was lucky enough to be able to try it, but I only tried the first chapter, which was the action reaction. And, I loved it. You know, one of the reasons why I loved it as an educator is something that you talked about already or earlier, and that is you have to interact with something. I've seen lots of mixed reality, or even I can call it just AR, where they plop a 3D model or a 3D object into the space and the learner can look at it, which is fine. But then the educator has to do a lot of heavy lifting. In other words, have a crystal clear lesson plan so that the student can look at the right things, ruminate where they need. You know, it's one thing to have this amazing animated beating heart in front of you in a room, but that doesn't guarantee that you're going to learn anything. You could be looking at things that are incorrect. You could be interpreting what you see, whereas adding an element of interaction where you're getting feedback as you're doing it obviously lends to a stronger learning experience. One of the things I noticed, which I really appreciated, is when you take the ball and you launch it, you can have it bounce off objects in your room. It could bounce off the wall or the floor, or you could add a mirror, which would then act as a reflection point. Why did you decide to consider both? Like, I could have set up my little puzzle and, you know, have it bounce off the wall, the floor, and then get to its destination, or I could include a mirror. Why the mirror as the extra reflection point?
Perfect. One of the challenges with designing in mixed reality, I think one of the biggest challenges that all of the latest mixed reality projects are having, is every person's house and room is completely different. So you have no control over the environment in which the users are going to be using your application. So we kind of thought that was going to happen, but that was one of the biggest challenges when we were doing some initial user testing. And we could not guarantee that every puzzle, every level would be accomplished, can be completed in every person's home. Someone has a sofa, someone has a table, someone has a different layouts. So there was no way that we could actually set up a level that everyone can complete it perfectly, because they might have objects that that interfere with that completion. So the way that the way that we kind of set it up is, we asked for a certain layout, so kind of you can complete it at least on the wall section, and then all of these yellow checkpoints that you mentioned is the ideal way of solving it, or the ideal puzzle, the ideal challenging puzzle, to make sure that we're covering all of the items. And the reason why they're optional, you can get two, you can get one, you can get all three, is that maybe one of those is behind a sofa, so we don't actually need you don't actually need to get that one to complete the level. What we wanted to avoid was getting the user stuck in any specific moment of the challenge. So lack of friction was something that we wanted to prioritize. So potentially you could get two of these yellow checkpoints. One is behind your sofa, that's fine, and you can still continue using the application. That was kind of the thought process around that.
I love that, in that, so again, I'm always from the lens of learning, and I've spent a lot of time reading books about how we learn best. And your app does a really good job of what we call scaffolding. In other words, you know, let's start with the first scaffold that I noticed. And it was, you started with action reaction, as opposed to something a little bit more complicated where you have to control more variables like inertia or the other one. So when I put the headset on, just so the learners kind of can envision this, if I start with just action reaction in your app, one of the things I'm only controlling at the start is the angle. I'm not controlling the velocity. I'm not controlling how big the ball is. All I'm doing is I'm gently getting into the shallow end of the pool of this app, which is I just have to simply adjust the angle. So it's acclimating me to the app, but it's also acclimating me to the learning experience. And as the puzzles go up, they get a little bit harder. So, you know, kudos to you. I suspect that was intentional.
Yeah, for sure. Because it would make more sense that the first law, which is Newton's law of inertia, would be the first chapter. But we realized that would not align with how we would slowly introduce the user into these mechanics. So that was kind of one of the interesting learning curves. We started with the third law, which is action and reaction. And instead of using third law, we just call it law of action and reaction, which is the case. And it's the most elemental, which is an object, it touches another object and it bounces off. Kind of the same force that's applied there is applied back. And that allowed us, that more simple mechanic, which is kind of the fundamentals of pool, for example, allowed us to really allow the user to gradually get into the core mechanics. Because if we would just throw a user into all of these mechanics, there's too many things to do. We really need to handhold the user, and especially with a younger audience. So that was something that we also learned in user testing. And all of these insights were based on user testing. So we really went to one mechanic at a time. So this is kind of more on the game design side. where you wanted to first, you can't even, at the first level, you can't even move, you can't even aim the launcher. It's really just understanding. You have to shoot it. You have to like click the main button to shoot the projectile. And then we unlock the aimer. So we're doing one mechanic at a time as you progress through the whole learning experience, which is these three modules. So for example, in the second chapter, which is around law of inertia, at that moment is where we unlock being able to change your environment, your environment's drag force. So we really do one step at a time. And then towards the end, you have the full mechanics of all of the app, and it's more than an hour of learning. It's around 2 hour learning experience of doing the whole system. And then you can go into the sandbox mode, which allows you just to play around. So that's more like an experimental, being able to see how things work, be able to try it in a different environment. It's really about setting up different systems. You can create your own puzzles, share them with a friend, and it's more like a sandbox fun and play area. Kind of like how science is all around, like experimenting, seeing how things work. That was the idea around the sandbox, and giving a tool for students, parents, teachers to be able to allow users just to play around with these concepts. It was kind of like in as a companion to the actual learning modules was kind of the thought process around the that specific sandbox system.
And the other notion behind that is if you throw someone into a sandbox without any knowledge or understanding or pre-existing schemas about how physics works, they're not really going to, you know, they might be able to muck around, but they're not going to stay in the sandbox very long. But if you guide them through a process of learning explicitly, like your app does, and then now that they have sort of those tools, that understanding, now they're more apt to do purposeful things within the sandbox, as opposed to, you know, some people build just sandbox type things, and that's great, but only if you're a teacher who then teaches a whole bunch of stuff and then says, okay, here, now you're ready to go into the sandbox. The second thing that I really appreciated as a beginning learner was this notion of anxiety. So if I'm a novice and I'm just starting to learn things, if you threw a timer in there, for example, my level of anxiety would go way up. Or you also alluded to this, in the game, one of the things is to take the beginning ball, and you're trying to, one of your goals obviously is to get it to the end point, but also along the way, you have these little yellow balls that's kind of a secondary goal. And I say secondary because it truly is. If I don't hit all the yellow balls, I still get to complete the level. And what that did for me was it reduced my anxiety because there's no timer. And I was more apt to do what's called trial and error, which is how we learn. We learn from mistakes. So I might have, in the higher levels, I would literally, my strategy became, I just hit the launch and I saw where that first ball would go. And I would do it again. And I kind of started to just piece. And because there was no score there in front of me, there was no timer, I felt comfortable. I felt like, okay, I can take my time. I can ruminate on this. And that's how we learn. So I love that mechanic.
Yep. And that was by design. So it was all around being able, kind of the thesis was to be able to explore, experiment, and solve puzzles by trial and error. That was the thesis. And one interesting insight was, at one point, we were having a challenge, which was, it was so trial and error that users would not actually link the core concepts. That was kind of, we had gone all the way to one end where just by moving things around, you would kind of figure it out. But we wanted to do more emphasis in actually what is it that you are doing, what input is it that you're doing that's affecting that. So one chapter of kind of the development and understanding of these concepts of user behavior was, how can we reinforce the action that you're doing is linked to the concept? So we started with it. So we always had this in mind. At the beginning, it was just like so much trial and error that it gets to a point where you're just like moving things around to see to make it work, which is good. But we want, and it's great, but we wanted to make sure that the user knew and understood the fundamentals of what he was doing. So with that, we actually had more emphasis in when you're actually moving these variables, what is actually happening. So we have a diagram that kind of says, okay, you selected water, how much drag force in units, in abstract units, does that apply? we didn't just assume that water is heavier, but we actually show that in numeric in representative values. So we did more emphasis to maintain that trial and error exploration, experimenting to solve a problem, but reinforce that what the actions that the user is doing and what is he actually changing. Reinforce that the masses are different, so we have a better representation of the projectile's mass. Before it was just color, now we actually have like volumetric mass showing, and in the environments we're actually representing how much in numeric values, in abstract numeric values, does that environment that you're in apply to the scene. So 100%, and we actually went, our insight was, if you do too much of that, you might miss out on communicating the core concepts that the user or student or learner should be reinforcing. So that's kind of the insight there.
More and more schools, from my end and perspective as a consultant, are starting to buy the Quest 3. So let's envision this in a school. So, you know, I'm a teacher, I'm a physics teacher, or maybe a middle school science teacher, and, you know, I have maybe 20 Quest 3s, and I'm going to use your app somewhere along my unit, maybe a few times throughout my unit, to apply Newton's laws of motion. One thing about the mixed reality experience is the notion of how much space do I need? Now, in a classroom, some of them are a little bit smaller. Are you worried about that challenge of having 20 learners in a classroom and not having enough space? Tell me how you might overcome that and convince teachers that, you know, this is still going to work.
Perfect. There's two things I want to talk about kind of on the classroom settings. One that we can leave for later is kind of the spectrum that we talked about before, which is the game on one side and tools on the other, like seeing the hardened 3D. We can come back to that one. This one specifically in terms of introducing mixed reality into the classroom. And my thought process around here is, I think that Google Cardboard had created a very, I'm not sure if it's harmful, the word, but the whole Cardboard generation, I think, which was, there was a big push into education. I think people, it did not really deliver on the promise of real immersive VR. So I think that was a big challenge. I know that the strategy to get into more people's hands, but I think that quality is always super important, at least on the first generation. So I think many educators and schools and institutions are a bit burnt by the Cardboard generation of experiences. So that's one thing. And then also VR itself, which I'm a big fan, I just feel that it's very challenging in a group setting. I think it's a very big commitment to put your VR headset on and be completely isolated in public. So I think there's a user commitment there. And even, it just feels weird. In your home, in privacy, I think it's amazing. But in public, you can kind of, it's a big commitment to get into a VR experience. Because you're separated from the world, so it's a bigger personal investment to really allow yourself to get fully immersed into that experience. But what I think is amazing about mixed reality is that commitment is much lower. That friction of using is much lower because you put on your headset and it's exactly you're seeing a pass through, but the feeling after that initial 10 seconds, you're still exactly where you were. There is your commitment to that. To getting inside of that environment is very low because basically you just put it on and you're there. You see your people. You see who's looking at you. So all of that importance of being present, of being being in control, basically, kind of, I think VR, you kind of lose control in a public setting. But mixed reality doesn't have that issue. So I think what I'm very excited about is mixed reality is being presented as a new technology. It's presenting as a new generation. And I think many people, many consumers, many institutions are going to approach this as a new chance, a new generation, a new chapter, and a new beginning of this approach to this technology. Many people say, hey, but we tried VR in 2016. It's like, this is not VR. This is mixed reality. It's a new technology. Give it a try. So I think we have a new chance here in terms of getting this into more people's hands, into more institutions. So I'm super excited on that. And in terms of the classroom setting, I think the magic is going to be multiplayer experience or multi-user experiences. I think it's not that everyone is in their own space and we're all having an experience isolated and then we come back. It's we're all going to have an experience together in a room with our teacher. And instead of just looking at a PowerPoint presentation, we're all going to be interacting together in this space. Now it's my turn, it's your turn, I'm in control, the teacher's in control. So I think multi-user, which is something that we're thinking about a lot, I think is going to be I think will be the key in terms of being able to really stimulate this usage in public classroom settings.
I agree. There's tons of research around, you know, learning should be social. Learning should be, as you said before, amongst groups of people, because then there's more apt for people to bounce ideas off each other and so on. You use curling as a metaphor, and I giggled inside because being a staunch Canadian, I know curling quite well. In your curling metaphor, one thing that, because I've played curling, that came to mind was the notion when you throw the rock, you can do an in-turn to cause it to spin and an out-turn. So this sets up one of my other questions I really wanted to ask you is, what are some next features for your app now that you sort of have, you're getting user feedback, you know, you're talking to all sorts of different constituents, you know, will you add the idea like in curling where you can spin the ball?
Yep, that's a great question. Because we see the current version of Newton's Loom as a V1, we've launched it for free. So the idea here is not to capitalize on this first version. It's really to learn and to grow. We want to be leaders in the space and being able to get this into the most hands as possible and getting the most feedbacks, having the most conversations, I think will be key here. The way that we're seeing is that this is one super niche topic, which are these three laws of Newton's, this introduction. And we really like this approach of introductory concepts. So the way that you really get into a concept, it's really stimulating an interest in a specific topic. Then you can go into depth, which is a different challenge itself to really deep dive in. But this introductory level of topics, I think, is amazing because you really present it as a game. You really get understanding, and it's not only introduction; it's the elemental, it's the core, the most important topics. Like there's a name for that, I forgot. So the way that we're seeing the future is, instead of doing more depth into Newton's laws of physics, we think there's a lot of value into doing this same concept, but for different physics concepts or different science concepts. So we're thinking about the internal name we're using is Discovery Room, but we're thinking Discovery Room would have Newton's room for physics. We would have Ohm's room for electricity, circuit boards, kind of understanding the core concepts of electricity, Turing's room to be able to understand logic and programming, Edison's room to understand energy. So it's like a collection of these different mini experiences that are introductory to all of the different core science topics. That's kind of how we're visioning the potential future.
And there's great runway for that particular philosophy. One of the things that I work really hard at when I work as a consultant with teachers and schools is many of them are still seeing these applications as an add-on, and they shouldn't be. And if it's too detailed, too specific, then as we talked about before, there's no sense putting a brand new learner into a learning experience if it's just going to overwhelm them and cause extensive cognitive load. Whereas if, like you guys did, if you target kind of an overview, you could do it at the beginning of the unit on Newton's laws, or again, there's a fundamental principle about learning research, and that is we have to have distributed practice, and we need to space that out, which is why, you know, we give practice tests, which is why we let them do, you know, review worksheets. But now we have this whole new medium, either VR or in your case, MR, where they can revisit stuff that maybe the teacher brought up earlier on in the unit through a more hands-on interactive. So I like the idea that, you know, you're hanging your hat on some basic fundamental principles, because then if I'm a physics teacher or a teacher in general, I can deploy your app in a number of different points along the timeline of when I teach that unit. So kudos to you guys on that.
Yeah,
I want to... Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to bring back the spectrum of that we kind of briefly talked about. Because like the way that we're thinking about this is that we like an application, a piece of software, at least in this use case. On one side, we have a video game that's an educational video game. So it's a game that you're actually doing something else, but through that doing something else, you're actually learning and absorbing knowledge about that topic. And then one, you know, it's one that comes to mind is that when I was a kid, Age of Empires 2, one of my favorite video games when I was a kid, I was an expert in the Byzantine Empire. I was like, just, I had 8 years old. I was actually talking about all these different civilizations and what they were good at, et cetera. And all I was doing was just playing Age of Empires. So that was kind of a fully video game, but you really learn a lot of things. And then on the other side, I see it like on the other side of the spectrum, it's tools for the classroom, tools for educators. Like you mentioned before, those tools are not standalone by themselves. So just seeing a heart in 3D in your space, it's not enough as a standalone experience to be educational, of high educational value, but it does have a lot of high educational value as a companion tool to an educator, to an education process, where educators use images, textbooks, videos. There's many different tools that by themselves might not be enough, but with Companion as a tool, as a tool set in an educator, there is value. And for everything that is spatial in the sense that, you know, a heart or anything medical or anything that they're very abstract concepts, they're spatial in the sense that they're 3D by nature. So like a heart, there's in terms of space, and there's all of these different concepts about understanding the proportions. And I think mixed reality or even VR as well is a great tool to be able to present that material in a much more realistic or high value way. So I also see there's a lot of value in that spectrum. And one of the challenges with when we were starting to design Newsroom is on that spectrum from a fully video game to an educational tool, where an educational support material, we can call it, like where do we land that? Because if we do a full game, like great, you've learned all, it's great, but potentially, you know, the actual value might not be that much, and it's very hard to deploy that in a classroom. And if we do the other side, it's great value, but we really need like champions of this tool to actually be able to put it in and use it out. It's not standalone by itself. So that's, I think, one of the biggest challenges in this whole space is along that spectrum, where do you choose and where is the highest value on that spectrum? That's kind of something that we're thinking about.
Awesome. I'm mindful of time, so I always give the interviewee an opportunity if there's something that we didn't talk about that you feel educators need to know about Newton's Room or TreeView in general.
So we're actually working on two projects at the moment, two public projects, which is Newton's Room, which it's exactly around this spectrum. What we're doing now is really learning. And I think we've just started a new chapter on the generation of computing and especially immersive computing, which is mixed reality and mixed reality. And we're really trying to understand with this idea of trial and error. So doing smaller projects, launching them, seeing how they react, seeing the value, exploring, and really iterating on that. So to have a brighter, you know, spectrum of that, we are in this same spectrum. We're exploring gaming, immersive gaming, standalone gaming, which is Newton's Room. And then we're also exploring another. On the other side of the spectrum, we are exploring, we're calling it, it's a project called InViewer. It's also an internal project. And we're thinking it's like a collection of STEM simulations. And we see it as kind of like a Wikipedia of the spatial medium. The same way that you would go to Wikipedia to understand a specific topic, you would read that up with text, videos, not too much videos, but it's really just text and reference images. How would that translate into an immersive space, like this heart example, or any other topic? The topics we're exploring there is chemistry. We're exploring biology. We're exploring some concepts of engineering. How do we present very valuable information, knowledge in a spatial context? And it's not only about seeing a 3D model. So I think that's the main lacking. Just being able to see an animated 3D model, it's not enough to justify getting into that experience. There has to be input and reaction. There has to be, I do something and I see something. So I think that's the key of this second project that we're working on, which is how can we present, this is on the tool side, how can we give educators a tool that they can give to students or even use in the classroom, and they see a simulation of a topic and they change something, and that changes the experience. So like, for example, in a windmill, how is the relationship between the amount of wind and the speed that windmill rotates at? How does that link the actual amount of energy that's being produced? So it's about, it's not only just seeing one static moment, it's about seeing the relationship between different states of that concept and how that, that changes. The same with, we're doing one which is a human gestation, which is kind of the process of the creation of the human inside. So that whole process, you can read in a book, you can see in a video, but there's something about being able to really explore each phase of growth of the gestation process, which is something that we're also interested in. So it's like two different verticals that we're trying to better understand in this spectrum, one side and the other, and where the highest value is for educators and for this next generation of users.
I love your windmill example. You know, when you were explaining it and talking about it, I couldn't help but think, yeah, you know, what if a student could change the size of the blades of the windmill? You know, there's actually a 2D version of what you're describing. The company is called explorelearning.com, except unfortunately it's not spatial, it's 2D, but mm-hmm. having the ability for a student to test out their thinking, their hypotheses, by being able to actually put some other variable or switch out mm-hmm. some other variable to see for themselves is a key part of the learning process. So bravo to you guys on building that out. If people are excited about, you know, Newton's room or some of the other things like InView that you talked about, how can they learn more or get a hold of you?
So my main watering hole online is LinkedIn. So that would be Horacio, it's Horacio Torrendel. That's where we're mostly at. And yeah, and what I think is different, like from our journey, like these last 8 years in the XR space, this is the first time that we're actually building in the open and building our own things and exploring. So we're taking like that leap of growth. Until now, we've really been focused on enterprise work. So we've done a lot of training, both in mixed reality and in VR these last years for many enterprises. We work with some of the biggest companies in the world, including, you know, Medtronic, Ulta Beauty, Daiichi Sankyo, which is a large pharmaceutical. We've built the University of Alberta's AR learning platform a few years ago. That was interesting. That was on mobile AR, kind of working with their engineering department. So we've done a lot of enterprise work, which is really what we enjoy doing a lot. It's kind of really helping, because at the end of the day, we are software developers. We are software engineers. So being able to collaborate, something where I think we have such a great synergy with clients is that clients are experts in their domains, and we are experts in building XR software. And having that fusion of domain expertise in a niche topic and great software developers and great builders, I think is where the real magic happens. So I think something that we are learning now in this space is that we are XR software developers. That's what we do. We're great at that. We're great at building XR products, but we don't have too much super knowledge in other domains of different industries. That's kind of why we chose physics and STEM, because that's the area outside of software engineering that we most understand, coming from engineering backgrounds. So that's kind of something that we're exploring now, is how can we partner with experts in different fields to actually be able to bring the best software engineers and XR product developers with experts in different domains and really be able to fuse those together. That's kind of what we're thinking about now.
Awesome. Well, Horacio, thanks so much for, paving a new world for student learners out there who are getting sick and tired of just sitting in their desk and listening to passive lectures all the time. And then thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Craig. It's really great what you're doing, and looking forward to continue to collaborate in the future.
Awesome.